Hey friend, are you struggling to find consistent paid speaking gigs? Do you want to know the exact 6 steps that you can take to find and book more paid speaking opportunities in 2024? Well, we want to make that easy for you. We've created a new free resource with the help of Dan Irvin, one of our highly successful speakers on our team. Dan has booked over $100,000 in paid speaking gigs in the last few years, and his 6-step process is going to help you maximize your chances of getting booked and paid to speak in any industry. You're going to learn how to get started prospecting, master discovery calls and proposal emails, and so much more. All you got to do is go to thespeakerlab.com/steps, and we're going to send you this 18-page guide straight to your inbox. Again, that is thespeakerlab.com/steps, and you're going to get that free guide. Hey, thanks for listening. You're awesome. Hey, what's up, friends? Graham Baldwin here. Welcome back to the Speaker Lab podcast. So good to have you here with us today on episode 301. We're so excited that we've crossed the 300 mark. This is really, really cool. We really do appreciate you being here. Whether this is your first episode you've been listening to, or you've been here for all 300 plus episodes, we really do appreciate your support and kindness. In fact, to celebrate episode 300, we are doing a huge giveaway where the grand prize is actually going to be free enrollment in our new program called Virtual Speaking Pro. Plus, we're going to give you a bundle of 5 of my favorite speaking books, a free copy of my new book, The Successful Speaker, and maybe the biggest part, maybe not, depending on who you are, is an hour-long one-on-one coaching session with me, which I'm really excited about. I cannot wait for. And so to enter the giveaway, all you got to do is visit thespeakerlab.com/giveaway, thespeakerlab.com/giveaway. And the good news is that if you don't win the grand prize, you actually have 5 runner-up winners as well who are going to get a copy of my new book, The Successful Speaker, plus an hour-long group coaching call with myself and Eric Ream, who's one of our amazing coaches and our director of education here at the Speaker Lab. So 6 winners in total. You don't want to miss it. Again, all you have to do to enter this giveaway is to visit thespeakerlab.com/giveaway. Again, that is thespeakerlab.com/giveaway. All right, we've got a great show for you today. We've got a great guest. We're going to be talking with Ryan Giffen, and this is actually a Facebook Live we did just recently. We actually had Ryan on the show back in episode 154. Ryan is a speaker agent for Premier Speakers Bureau and a great guy, very knowledgeable about the speaking industry. So I wanted to have a conversation with him. He does a lot, specifically in the education space, a lot with teachers, a lot with colleges and schools, and just ask him, hey, what are you seeing right now with all that's going on in the world and as we near schools going back and the start of school and what that's going to look like? What are you seeing? What are you hearing? What are you, as far as speakers go in the speaking industry and in the education space? So we have a long, great conversation about all things speaking, what's going on right now in the world. So I think you're really going to get a lot from this conversation with Ryan. So let's jump right into it. Enjoy. Hey, what's up, friends? Grant Baldwin here, today joined by my buddy Ryan Giffen. Ryan is one of the agents over at Premier Speakers Bureau here in the outskirts of Nashville, Tennessee. And so I wanted to have Ryan come on here. He is someone who's been in the agent game for many, many years. We've had him on the podcast a couple times before, but wanted to talk about kind of what he's seeing on the front lines. He's someone who's dealing with and working with speakers and event planners literally day in and day out. And so excited to have some perspective from him on what's happening in the speaking industry through his eyes. So Ryan, thanks for joining us, man. How you doing today?
Hey man, I'm alive. I'm alive and well. We're doing great.
Hanging in there.
Fine. Everything's fine. Everything's good. No, man, we're doing great. Thanks. Hey, Grant, thank you for all the hard work that you're doing out there. I know you're kind of trying to be a light to so many people that are kind of in that weird place, and you're doing a great job.
Man, I appreciate it. We're all figuring it out as we go. I know we're all sick and tired of hearing that the unprecedented times that we are in, and this has certainly affected a lot of industries, but definitely the speaking industry. So for some quick background and context, kind of give us a snapshot of what's your role at Premier? How long have you been there? What do you do as a speaker agent? What industries do you primarily work with?
If you were to ask me that in January, I'd say I've been here for about 12 years. Now I say I've been here for about 37 years is what it feels like. It's been a crazy few months, but no, I started at Premier in June of 2008. So I just kind of finished 12 years here at Premier. I primarily am doing education, K-12 university events kind of in the public sector for universities. And yeah, man, I'm an agent and I'm loving it. It's great.
Very
stuff.
Nice, very nice.
I got Abraham Lincoln here
You got right him behind back me, there.
So we got good. Him. Thanks, Eric Wall. Appreciate it.
So as someone who's been working, especially in the education space for a long time, what is kind of a day in and day out? Like, what's your normal role? You're kind of the matchmaker between speakers and events. So you're talking with a lot of events, event planners, you're talking a lot with a lot of decision makers, and you're trying to find the right speaker for the gigs that they may be looking for. What does an average day look like for you?
Yeah. So coming into Premier, having zero clue even what a speakers bureau was, right? When I first looked at the catalog that Premier used to mail out to our event planners that we worked with, right? I remember looking through that. I'm like, I don't know any of these people. And like, I should know these people. So when I came knowing nothing about it, I was just kind of in a take it in mode. And what I really kind of found out where Premier's niche was going to be successful in the education space was predominantly with the K-12 schools, with teacher events, training events, professional development events. Mm-hmm. We kind of had a really good all-star cast of me coming into Premier, of some exclusives that were with Premier that really kind of helped establish the education market. But just growing that and seeing that there is a substantial market in the education space for professional development and those types of areas. In the university space, you know, I'm really kind of on a day-to-day basis, really working with student groups or university that holds for their speaker series or, convocation events. So, that's kind of a crazy world right now too. There's a lot of whole virtual, commencement ceremony speakers and those types of stuff. So that's kind of what I'm doing there. So,
all right. So I want to hear.
I hope I answered your question.
You did totally. And so I'm curious on two fronts. Like, one, like, what are you kind of hearing? Because again, you work with a bunch of agents there. I'm friends with several of you guys over there. And so, what are you kind of hearing amongst agents just across the board in the speaking industry? And then I want to dig into, especially in the education space, since again, you're on the front lines there. What you're hearing, but as you kind of talk amongst yourselves internally there, what's kind of the sense that you guys have at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think, education right now differs a little bit from the corporate space. There's a little bit more, there's a lot more to prepare for in education right now with, the world's teachers really kind of being in limbo, even up to this day with school starting in 3 or 4 weeks of, are we going online for our classes? Are we doing a blended where we're going to be some in classroom, some not? And so, there's a whole lot more stuff going on in education, but in a whole with, at Premier, it really just is kind of boiling down to, it's every week something new kind of develops or, is August or, is October fall events going to hold water, right? Are we going to see that? Some people are saying, yeah, we're moving forward. And some people are saying, hey, we're going to postpone. So we're getting kind of a mix of that. And it is kind of a difficult balance that we have. A lot of people are, eager to make book events and make decisions, but with all the unknowns in front of them, we are seeing a little bit less, frequency of those types of bookings that we'd be seeing at this time of the year. Yeah. So we're in a situation where we're having to just respond to the market, and the market's responding in various different ways with different groups. And like everybody says, and I was just talking to a client today, and I was just saying, I hate to beat this drum, but this is a geographical issue that we're dealing with. I'll talk to one group in California and they're like, by the way, the world ends tomorrow and everything's done. And then I'll talk to a group in Ohio or Missouri or Nebraska and they're like, we're going in person, woo! So it's like, whoa, what? And it is geographical. Illinois used to be kind of like this lockdown place. Now their numbers are good. So some people are like, hey, let's do some Illinois. It changes so much. And there's, you just have to kind of always be on it and flexible and ready to go.
Are you also seeing not only just geographically, but are you seeing certain types of events or certain types of spaces that are more open to doing something than others? So for example, universities versus doing, professional development trainings for teachers and educators versus, school assembly speakers, or the size of the school, or what are some of the things in addition to geography that you're seeing? Like, I'm starting to see a little bit more traffic here and this is still kind of on the back burner over there.
Yeah. So in my space, I think education is kind of feeling the same pinch that corporate is when it comes to some of the larger like national conferences or state conferences where you have a lot of people coming together, you know, 2,000-3,000 attendee conferences. You know, I think those people are still going to be feeling the pinch, not able to kind of move forward. They're kind of picking up their events and putting them into 2021 and just kind of like, you know, hoping for the best. Where I'm seeing the most action is, and kind of what I was going back to, was talking about earlier with the blended learning, online teacher training, getting our teachers ready for an unprecedented start of the school year, which is going to be completely different than any other start of the school year in the history of the world. But, you know, we're seeing a lot of those professional development events where teachers are getting training for, you know, online or remote teaching, blended learning, you know, but we're also seeing some groups that are saying, hey, you know, we need someone to encourage us and to make us laugh and to help us kind of refocus on our why and be the compass to like, hey, this is a tough situation, tough time, but we need the encouragement and that this is why we're doing what we're doing. And the, you know, that motivational message almost in a sense. And so they're kind of hungry for that as well. You know, we're seeing those happen in person when they can sometimes, but also virtually, you know, we're seeing those things happen. But yeah, in that space, those teacher training events, I mean, I think it's going to be interesting for any speakers or people that you're working with, Grant, that are kind of following your work or a part of your group that are doing student events. That's going to be an interesting space because, like, for instance, where you and I live, Grant, in Williamson County, you know, they're still going to have student assemblies up to a certain level, but once they cross a certain threshold in cases, they kind of go, like, we're seeing a lot of these tiered systems that you know, we're not going to do student assemblies if we get to this point, or hey, no student assemblies this year, or if we do student assemblies, you're going to have to do like 37 of them in one day because we can only have, you know, 12 people in a room at one time, right? So I just an exaggeration, but you know, we have had some groups say, hey, we want him to speak to the students, but he's going to have to do, we're going to have six, you know, assemblies instead of the two that we normally do, just so we can have space and, you know, just that flexibility that the speakers have to have with that. And normally you'd be like, whoa, six in a day, I can do that. Or, yeah, that's hard. But, you know, we're seeing a bunch of that. It's going to, that piece of the business, of the speaking business, speaking to students is going to, we're going to slowly see what that's going to look like as schools get back into school, get back into the classrooms, see what the case numbers do, you know, and then at that point it will, you know, we'll just kind of have to respond to it as it goes. So
how long do you think it'll be before, you know, some of the larger conferences or events or even assemblies come back? I mean, if we're talking, you know, several hundred people or even in some cases, several thousand people, you got anything in your crystal ball that would tell us, you know, is that going to happen this year? It doesn't seem likely, but even into, you know, are we talking a year from now or even a couple years from now? Any sense of what that could look like?
Yeah. I mean, I never want to kind of like say, here's what I think, because I don't want to one, and you don't want to like predict anything wrong, because like who knows, like
we're all making educated guesses right now.
We're making educated guesses. It's so hard. I really think school districts are gonna have a hard time putting all the students, maybe like a six, like a, you know, high school, all high school students, so those traditional, you know, bleachers are filled with students, or an auditorium of 1500 students just crammed in there with teachers standing in the back, right? Those types of assemblies. I think those are we're going to have a hard time doing those. We are going to see more of the, hey, we're going to do four or five in one day. It's going to take a lot more work, but man, I think it will get to a point where if we can sustain low numbers and reopenings are not causing spikes, I mean, I think that's going to be your determination. People will do more bigger events, but you know, honestly, like this is the wishful thinking part. Like until a vaccine comes, these larger conferences where 2,000-3,000 people coming from around the country or world are together, you know, those are going to be tough to do. I think they can be done. We've had live events already play with, you know, 200 folks, and you know, they had medical checks and masks and social distancing, and they're, you know, they were separated. They're nervous. There's a lot of tension, you could tell, of the unknown, but I think they're doable. Yeah. It's just going to take that right situation for it to happen. And I think that right situation sometimes does happen more at that local level than at the national or state level.
Yeah, that makes sense. What's your take on virtual right now? There's obviously a bunch of things that are happening virtually. Yeah. I know for, especially early on, my sense was that a lot of speakers were a little apprehensive about doing more virtual. A lot of event planners mm-hmm. are a little apprehensive on doing more virtual. And now, you know, here we are in the middle of the summer and you know, several months into this, and there's not a lot of other viable options at the moment,
right.
You know? Yeah. And it's certainly different. It's like, we can't say like, oh, it's the same. It's not the same. But at the same time, we don't have a ton of other great options at the moment. So what are you seeing as far as are more and more live events that were mm-hmm. supposed to happen switching to virtual? Are new virtual events popping up? What are you seeing in the category of virtual?
Yeah. So, man, if I could chart my, what I would talk to people about on the phone about my perspective of virtual, if I could chart that from mid-March to now, like it's gone like all over the place right. and zipped around. And, you know, it because this problem affects everybody, there's not one solution. There's like 10 or 15, like, honestly, the thing that's best for virtual is when teachers, and again, I know this is a very small group and a very even more limited group because of the number of people that are specialized in this area, but online teaching and virtual training for teachers to be able to prepare them to be virtual instructors should be done online, should be done virtually, yeah. right? In that space that you're training them to be an instructor or a teacher in. So that space makes complete sense in doing that. We are just in general, I mean, I'm seeing virtual events. We're booking new virtual events. People saying, hey, you know, whether it was, you know, we had this event, but we're going to do it virtually. We've had situations where, you know, they've had one of our speakers booked for the event. They've converted that to virtual. And so all the situations go, are all over the place, but virtual is not okay. So here's an example that I give to people and you guys can use this. Virtual is not easier, period. It's convenient, but it's not easier.
Yeah.
Virtual, preparing virtual content, customizing it, you know, making sure everything is, because you're not just in a room full of people with your PowerPoint. You got the people's PowerPoints like 5 inches from their face. They're extreme, like those little like small edits that you like would stay up all night the night right. before making, and eventually be like, well, no one's ever going to notice. Like in virtual, dude, they're going to notice. Like they're going to see it. They're focus is, you know, is really strong in virtual. And so prep for virtual is not easier. And the example that we kind of talk to and we joke about with a lot of the education groups that we work with and education speakers is like, you ask every teacher in America, is teaching virtually easier or teaching in the classroom easier? And they would say in the classroom, like 100%. So, you know, granted, yeah, you can't teach with gym shorts on or, you know, sweatpants on. So there's conveniences to it. You know, yeah. you don't have to travel to the event. There's conveniences. You don't have to, you know, fly across the country and, you know, shake people's hands and get up early and stay in a hotel. Sure. Those are all conveniences, but it's not easier. And so it is this really difficult question of, you know, the industry standard for virtual is like half fee of what your normal, you know, keynote fee was. You know, and I think that's just the normal of what people think, as, you know, the value that they're going to get from it. But the, right. what I've seen is that people can bring solid value and content in virtual. I honestly, like part of me, and I know this is not like, maybe if this all stuff keeps up for, you know, a long time and people kind of make that shift to understanding virtual as being as important or necessary as in person, right. then it could. But honestly, like the value that the speaker brings, if their content's good, I mean, I kind of think you could charge the same. But what I've done in those situations and what your speakers can do as a model is that I really like to tier out my virtual, right? So I might be getting too technical here, but I really like to tier out my virtual. So sure, a 20 to 30 minute virtual presentation or what we would call a keynote, maybe not even call it that. sure, like that can be at a low budget range, fee range, you know, that you can ask for half of your fee for. But really what they're needing is added value and content, right? Extra time. And so I always work in, hey, here's a 30-minute option, a 60-minute option. Here's a 60-minute keynote with a virtual breakout or a virtual office hours. You know, we're getting a lot of those, and those are very standard in virtual trainings where you do your training or your speaking, and then you just are in a, essentially it's recreating the after the speech or after the event at the book signing table or at, right, at the stage where people come up to you and ask you questions, personal questions. Hey, I, you know, here's something, what do you think about this? That recreates that space, offering that. Now, granted, it does take you more time to offer those, but I think you can scale your fee up on what you bring as far as value and time that can get you closer to your standard fee. So you're not just saying, well, I can't, my business model doesn't work when I'm at 50% of pricing. Well, you need to readjust your pricing whenever the market changes. So, you know, your value of doing a 60-minute live keynote is probably going to be the same as a 30-minute virtual keynote. And then you move it up from there. And yeah, that's just something that I was, that I've been kind of toying with.
Yeah. And you kind of touched on it there, but I've heard different, you know, schools of thought from various speakers and those in the industry and some speakers who are going, hey, the value's the same in terms of the content of what I'm bringing to the table, whether I'm in person or whether it's online, and others, right, who are saying like, it's not the same experience. And so there's no way you can charge the same. There's also, one of the things I've seen, I think you may have seen this as well, is the higher level production value that a speaker is bringing to the table in terms of their lightings, perhaps multiple cameras, their microphone setup, you know, like a Vin Zhang, a Clint Pulver, like some guys who have like some really legit setups, are charging really solid, you know, fees around, if not on the same par as what their, you know, in-person fees would be. So any other just kind of like big picture thoughts that you're thinking that you have noticed or observations that you've made as far as speakers who are thinking about as they are quoting prices for virtual? Because it is, you know, I did an interview the other day with John Acuff, and I know one of your guys' clients, and you guys do a lot of work with.
Yeah, not familiar with John.
He's up and coming. He'll be okay. He might be able to make something of himself. But it's kind of like, it's just kind of the wild, wild west right now. Like everyone's kind of like, right, you know, events are making this up, speakers are making this up. But any other observations that you've had on speaking fees right now for virtual?
Yeah, I mean, I think it does. There's components that add to it. You know, your production value, your wow factor, engagement are all things that you really have to, you know, how am I intentionally engaging my virtual audience every 3 to 4 minutes? You know, normally when you get on stage, you can speak, you know, you engage your audience when you start with questions and more light stuff, and then your really important stuff. And then you can kind of get into your content and you can find yourself on stage speaking for 10, 15 minutes without ever asking the audience to think of something or to discuss something or anything like that. Completely different with virtual. So your engagement, you know, has to be at top level, and being creative with that, using virtual tools to do that, polls, you know, uniquely using your comment section or Q&A section to kind of create a conversation that's going on, because you are able to kind of ask them to break focus a little bit in a virtual setting than you would in an in-person setting, in engaging with that kind of content. But production value, yeah, I mean, if you've got Clint Pulver, you know, Vin Zhang, all these guys that you mentioned, they already had wonderful production value to their keynote, and they, right, just translated what they did to virtual. And so what you have to kind of do is, one, I need to stay to my brand. Like I can't have like, you know, fire flames coming up behind me, and like you can't like manipulate your production value. It's got to match, right, your brand. But honestly, like you can have, and Clint and Vin do it well, and they bring great content. However, if you try to do high production, high engagement, and your content is flat, yeah, and it's not everything you got, then you're going to be, it's not going to help you.
Right.
So like, to me, I conclude to content, like we've always said, just as if Dave Ramsey, cash is king for speaker world, like content is king.
Right.
Like if you don't have applicable content that challenge people to think, that make them say, I never thought of it that way, or I'm going to try that differently. If you don't have that content ready to go, you're not going to be successful. I don't care if you have, you know, tigers jumping behind, you know, behind you, like it just won't work at all. So that's a number, huge, crucial thing to remember. But yeah, another one of our speakers put out a really cool, and you may have seen it and you may know who I'm talking about, but he basically kind of categorized, hey, here's the production level of options that I have. Just as like option one is pretty much like on your iPhone. That's like the level of speaking that you're going to get. Then we have well lit. And then like all the way, he's got like five stages of well produced, you know, all the highest is very well produced, standing up, delivering it like a keynote with maybe some props or something that he's able to work within his content. So that too, you know, if you aren't comfortable with always being in that high level production, you know, business or high production level, virtual keynote, then give yourself some space to allow customers to choose, because, you know, one group may come to you and be like, man, we just need you for 30 minutes and we don't care if you're on your iPhone. Like we had an event where they asked for a pre-recorded video and they said, it can be from the guy's iPhone. We don't care. The production value, we don't care about, right? Yeah. It's who it is there and the content. And then the other ones are like, all right, now are they standing or sitting? Is it going to be at an angle? Is the camera, and like they're super focused on that. So you have to be prepared. Every customer is going to have these weird like things that they get stuck on, and having those options for them only kind of helps you have more product to sell to them.
When it comes to virtual, I've heard from some speakers who have, you know, like a Vin or a Clint who said, hey, I'm really going to lean into this. And I want this to be a large, long-term part of my strategy. Others who are just like, it's just not the same. And I'm doing it to buy time, but I don't enjoy it. How do you see virtual fitting into just the speaking industry as a whole long-term in the coming years, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years out? Is virtual still going to be a thing, or is everyone just kind of like, it's a stopgap until we get back to live events? What do you, again, magic crystal ball here, but how do you see that playing out?
There you go. I'm going to peer into it real quick. But yeah, I mean, early on, everyone's like, virtual sticking around long after this, like it's going to be around forever. It's going to be the new normal. And now we're just kind of realizing that people are hungry for live in person. So I do think that there's going to be aftershocks of virtual content, you know, maybe it is a group that otherwise prior to all of this would have just said, hey, we're not going to do an event. Well, they're going to stop and think, well, I guess we could do a virtual event, low cost. You know, all we have to do is the online platform. So sure, let's do something so we can get content out there. We can get cheaper speakers and those kind of things. I think there will be aftershocks of this that are going to continue on. But what I see it as is a resource. Why speakers, I believe, now need to be developing virtual content is that it will be the ultimate value add when things get back to full speed, when the vaccine hits, right? Or whatever it is, or we get back to a new normal way of living and in-person events are happening. The virtual content either is going to be expanded product line that you're going to be able to offer to a client, or it's going to be an additional value add to say, hey, I'll come into your conference, but you know, a week prior or a week after, I'm going to do an online engagement or a virtual engagement with your leaders or a certain group of your people or your teachers. You know, hey, you know, if you're a specialist in some education area and you want to offer that virtual interaction to a special group of educators that you can bring additional value to, they're going to see that as, okay, I'm getting the in-person and I got the content created and I've done it a million times. I can offer value-added virtual content as well. So packaging those, it's going to definitely be a supplement to the new 21st century speaker of being able to do those virtually in need. And honestly, like I never want to get into a situation where I'm telling the market or I'm telling my industry what it needs to be doing and then doing that. Like, I just think that, you know, unless you're just like have a perfect track record of always predicting the right thing, that's great. But if you get into a situation where like, I'm not investing in a virtual. So I've got a couple speakers who are like, I'm not doing any virtual. I don't like my virtual content. I don't like speaking on camera. I don't like doing that. And I'm just going to play it out. I know I'm losing money, but that's my choice. So that's their choice. That's great. But if you want to play in that long run game, be applicable past 2021, then you need to have that virtual content and you need to develop that new skill set. I mean, it's like the 2005 people saying, I'm not going to get a smartphone. That's ridiculous. My flip phone's great, you know. So it's fantastic. You know, you have to just really hear the market, and the market is just saying that one, now virtual is the only thing that most people are doing. And in the future, it's going to be a part, I think, of the DNA, you know. Sure. Yeah. Maybe 2023, 2024, when we've got all the, you know, everything's done. I still think even then, without the pandemic that we've experienced in these crazy times, right, virtual would be more prevalent than regardless. Yeah. So I think we do need to be prepared.
Yeah, I totally agree. I keep beating the drum that, you know, virtual is never going to replace in person, but people have seen it as a viable option. And like you said, there's a lot of upside to it. You think about all the logistics and details that goes into planning an event for 50 people, 100 people, let alone thousands of people, and the number of months that go into prepping for that, all that has to happen in order to get that many people in one place mm-hmm. at one time together versus yeah. like, we could plan a virtual event next week and it involves creating and sending out a link, you know? So it is simpler in some ways, it's harder in other ways, but for speakers mm-hmm. just in general, it doesn't have to be an either or decision. You can do both and you can pivot accordingly based on what the market is looking for at that time. So to kind of put a bow on things here, again, we've got a lot of yep. speakers who are, who especially over the past few months have felt a mix of, you know, optimism and hope. All right, we're going to be good. I got this. And then there's days you're just like, all right, well, like, yeah. what's plan B here, you know, and everything yeah. in between, you know, the fear, the uncertainty, and we all, you know, we all feel it. I know I've had plenty of conversations, you know, amongst speakers and those in the speaking industry where just the highs and lows we're all feeling. So what would yeah. you say to speakers right now who are just riding the highs and lows, the emotional waves here of trying to figure out how this is all going to play out?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say, stay like really focus on staying grounded and don't set up expectations don't set up goals that you know you have zero influence over. You know, the difference between setting a goal of like, I'm going to lose 100 pounds. Well, why don't you, it's the John Acuff thing, right? Set a goal of losing 10 pounds and then right. another 10 pounds. So like very early on, especially like when schools first started closing in March, you know, and our school district in Williamson County, right? That was like every day it was kind of, we'll update you. And so yeah. like, we didn't know what was going on in the world, but like we kept them be like, yeah, I really think, you know, this, they're going to go back to school. Like we didn't know that. And so like yeah. every day we were disappointed. So translate that to speakers. Like don't get in your mind that, hey, you know, I'm just going to do virtual content for a few months because I think that's going to happen. Like I think investing into the long run of whatever's working now only potentially helps you, never hurts you.
Yeah.
Right. Like it will only, preparing virtual content will actually only help you exercise your in-person content when that time comes. Developing and diversifying the packages and the options that you have to provide to customers it can only help you, right? Can only help, you know, give them more options to choose from and look outside of, you know, speaking engagements. I mean, it's a hard thing to say as we're talking to a bunch of speakers, you know, but like look to see how your content can add value in different ways, courses, you know, podcasts and developing content outside of the in-person. But again, all of it directing back towards your brand, all of it directing back towards you're the expert on whatever you talk about, and that your story is the most inspirational and needs to be booked when we can book live events, right? So I think as long as you're focusing on those things in the next 6 to 5, 6, 10 months, 12 months, who knows how long, right?
Right.
But you know, as long as you're focusing on those things, you're still honing your craft, you're still building your brand, you're developing new content and you're engaging your audience. And like, that's just the recipe for being a successful speaker. It's just, we can't get on stage right now. So you got to do it the other ways. And I just say, don't stick your head in the sand. Don't, you know, say, well, I'm only going to do this. And then I'm going to, you know, that's all I'm going to put the time and right. energy to. So, you know, put the hustle in and make it happen. But
Hey, unintentionally mention the successful speaker, 5 steps for booking gigs, getting paid, building your platform. Go pick up that book at bookstores near you, or bookstores are probably closed. So go to Amazon, order your copy. So Ryan, thanks for the time, man. We appreciate it. If people want to find out more about you, what you're up to, where can we go?
Dude, thanks for having me on, bro.
Where do we need to go? Are you at
where
do people need to go to find you?
Last time I did your podcast, I told people to email me and you were like, don't say that.
Yeah, we should probably not do that. Scratch that.
But we probably scratch it again. But anyways, no, go to premierspeakers.com. Check us out. I'm on Facebook, Instagram.
Here's the deal. Like anytime we have anyone who's an agent or a bureau, I always try to give the cautionary tale of just like, hey, 95% of speakers listening, watching right now, don't go attack Ryan. Okay. So he's busy.
All you need to know is like what's right here, what's written right here. Just Google that.
Perfect.
And you can find me anywhere.
Giff, thanks for the time, man. We appreciate it, buddy.
See you later, guys.
All right, there you go. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Ryan Giffen. Now, again, before we wrap up, before you take off, one other reminder that we are doing this huge giveaway for the 300th episode. Don't forget to go to thespeakerlab.com/giveaway to enter it, where you can win my favorite books on speaking, our brand new virtual speaking pro program, an hour-long coaching call with me. And I'm so excited to announce the winner once the giveaway ends. We've got just a couple days left on that if you're listening to it now, which is when you should be listening to it, is when the episode comes out. Don't wait for months from now. But listen to these episodes when they come out. But go to thespeakerlab.com/giveaway to register, to enter, to win. Who knows? It might just be you. So thanks for hanging out with us, my friends. We'll catch you next time. You're awesome.